there. Welcome, everybody, to Spectrum West. 9th of March. A little chilly today, but I think we'll be all right. I mean, the forecast, wow. I'm Al Ross. Today's a program about big music, as in an orchestra concert tomorrow night. It's about original music, as in a unique look at the supper club era of Wisconsin from a musical mysterious angle. Stage story about the Righteous Brothers comes to Hudson. Jim Oliver tells us about that. But what do you say we not waste any time? Let's remind you about a young man who recently captured our imagination simply by displaying some of his own.
I'm Reed Grimm, and I'm 26 years old. You ready for this?
Arms, they reach out to me.
Another Casey there.
Yeah.
Other eyes smile.
Reed Grimm rode the American Idol wave on national television right up to where the finalists were chosen. He was top 24. Then America said no to a seat in the finals, but the three celebrity judges said, wait a minute, we want to hear from him one more time, and we might want to put him in the finals ourselves. It turns out the encore wasn't enough for them, but Reed Grimm's performances and probably his energy and positive outlook was more than enough for people in Wisconsin, especially around the west and northwest parts, the neighborhood in which he grew up, in Ellsworth. So with Ryan and J-Lo and Randy and Steven in the rearview mirror, we decided to have lunch with Reed to talk all about it. And it was fun to watch, in a public place, the notoriety that now is attached to his daily life. Several folks noticed who he was and made sure they congratulated him, but most notably thanked him for representing Wisconsin so nicely. Let's go backwards for a bit and listen to the kinds of entertainment dues that Mr. Grimm paid with the family band a number of years ago.
My mom, my dad, and then the four kids, you know, or, you know, as they came along, added them as they came along. And it was a show band, you know, like a lounge act, so they did top 40 stuff, show tunes. At that time, you know, in the 80s, like, hotels had lounges, you know, where you'd go and you would stay for 2 weeks. And you'd be there, and you'd be the act, you know, and play every night. And so we would do hotels, we'd do state fairs, you know, did some casino stuff. I don't think I was ever part of the casino thing. I don't remember that. But yeah, you know, we would just go and it'd be, you know, entertaining, you know, resorts. And yeah, just basically play, yeah, like top 40 stuff. And, you know, and of course the kids come out and the kids are doing, you know, zippity-doo-da, zippity-yay, you know, it's 4 years old.
During the Hollywood portion of the Idol adventure, as much of America saw, he had some doubts, some anxiety that was kind of foreign to him.
I was talking to a friend of mine at one point about, you know, about thoughts that creep up in your head. Mm-hmm. And he called it, I really loved it, he called it snowball management, where, you know, you get a thought, and then that thought can attract another thought that is similar. Like energy, like thoughts, and you know, it can just boom, 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 and roll around. And when you're in a situation like this, like that, thoughts of self-doubt are, ugh. It was like whoa, whoa, whoa. And that, and what was crazy about that experience was I had that self-doubt, and I wanted to just kind of take a breath and, you know, slow down, but we were on a schedule and had to go to, you know, to get this done because they're like, oh, oops, little glitch in the system. All right, now we have to, you know, take care of it. And, you know, there's other musicians, you know, involved. It's not just me. It's like this whole machine happening. So I had to go. Had those thoughts and wanted to just, like, take a breath. Didn't really have the opportunity to do that. And then there's a camera on me representing 20 million people, so then I'm like, whoa, it just like that cranked that whole anxiety thing just way up.
He knew he had his own personal reserve of strength and reorganization, though, but decided it was a good idea to tap the positive influence of his mother, Colleen Ray, a notable singer-entertainer well known for revival shows like Girls Singers of the Hit Parade, Sirens of the 60s, a tribute to Patsy Cline, appearances in front of orchestras, and more. He reached out, and Reed realizes the luxury of having her strength and perspective to call on.
Yeah, she's totally a mom, you know, and and out there and having the whole world, you know, like a camera on you for that, for something going through just like a moment, and then having to turn it around and perform, you know, you have to have yourself centered. So I just, you know, wanted to just be reminded of just home, of like truth, you know, really. And so would have talked to anyone, any family or whatever, you know, someone who knew me, hey, you know, you got this, it's cool, just chill, you're good. And but my mom, you know, my parents split when I was six, and so I stayed with my mom, you know, I was raised by her primarily, and so yeah, she and my older sister, my older brother, I mean, like, we're pretty tight, you know, like, we all work together, and we all play together, and it's a great family, but just, like, that moment where I was like, I need to call my mom, I talked to my mom, I talked to my older sister, you know, they didn't show all of it, but, you know, just, they definitely bring, of course, for anyone, you know, they bring you back.
By comparison, we don't know much about Reed's dad. He passed away a few years ago, but he too was part of the genetic order that provided Reed with such a head start. His dad was a strong vocal presence, having once been named Male Vocalist of the Year in Branson, Missouri.
He said one thing that I remember about my dad as far as performing. He said, you know, you can have the greatest voice in the world, but when you're talking about entertaining a crowd... I guess at one point my parents were doing a show and the power went out and there was all these people there and it was right at the beginning of the show. So he said, hey, go grab a flashlight. I told the drummer to go grab a flashlight or something. Went up and just put a flashlight on him and he entertained the whole crowd with a guitar. So he said, you know, you can sing, but if you can put a little bit of theater into it, then you know, people start feeling things, you know, and the way that I interpret that is, if you can sing and you yourself can actually experience the feelings and the emotions that are going on, then you're really communicating something, and that's what I definitely have gotten from my dad.
So what parts of who you are today were most influenced by having to grow up in a separated household?
I think my personality, you know, I'm just thinking, like, I think I have a round personality where it's not jagged, you know, where you know, things come at me and they, you know, it's just kind of soft. You know, I think that's probably from my mom, you know, just being easy, you know, try to be easy and work with the scenarios and not try to control, like, super over-control a situation, but, you know, work with it. You know, I think that's probably something that I got from my mom, for sure, which is helpful.
He had tried out for American Idol four other times, trying to be someone else. After the fourth strike, he waited 5 years and felt he had made a successful trip all the way back to himself. Turns out he, and not some hyped-up stage version of Reed Grimm, was enough.
That's, like, the biggest thing that I can say to anyone. Relax, be yourself, you know, and continue to do that. Continue to trust that, because, like I said, you know, I had moments of self-doubt on trying to be like, oh, these other voices are huge and I need to be this and that. That's just not the case. Big lesson.
After his very idle public speed bump, he collected himself very nicely and got back on track. That reminded him that he was well within his comfort zone. Still, there were things that blew him away, like the quality of musicians backing each contender.
Oh, man. The musicians were crazy. And it was so easy to be like, hey, can you guys do this? And they're like, oh, you mean this? And you're like, yep. And it was just there. So easy to do. Yeah, it was really quick. It was really, really fast. You know, we did have some downtime, but still processing the whole experience for sure.
We're talking with Reed Grimm on Spectrum West.
Just shoot for the stars. If it feels right, aim for my heart. If you feel like it, take me away. Make it okay. Well, I swear I'll behave. Well, you want to control. So we waited. I put on the show. Now we're naked. You see, I'm a kid. Then it goes like this.
That's his rendition of the 2010 hit by Maroon 5, Moves Like Jagger, that the judges loved, but America just liked. His perspective is one that admits he now has a pretty cool experience on his resume. And unlike most of the other Idol contestants, he didn't have that same, this is my only chance outlook. He's been around the block as a young entertainer, you see.
And I have been for my whole life, and I'm going to continue to do that. But I know that I have a lot also to say, you know, so it's not just taking other people's things and doing my version of them. I have a lot to say, and I've said a lot of stuff with Shoeless Revolution. That's what I want to focus on more, you know, because there's enough Shake Your Ass Girl songs, and that's fun, you know, but we are evolving, and we'll see where it goes.
So, Reed Grimm, are you going to kick back for a while now, or is it, I want some more of that?
Right. Well, to a certain degree, yes. You know, what I'm doing right now is I'm getting some offers, like some offers for acting, some offers for, you know, singing, you know, from different bands around the area, and I don't want to just take the first thing that comes, you know, just want to relax. I just went through a huge circus, which was fun, and I am really happy that it happened, but I think what I want to do is just chill for a little bit and write. And I have this dream project that I'm working on that will be revealed at a later date. It's my dream, and it has to do with art and, you know, supporting art in our education programs for kids to, you know, just to be able to have the opportunity to draw and paint and play a trumpet and dance and, you know, sculpt and all that. Yeah, because I think it's really important. So, and just even talking about it right now is just like getting me excited. Yeah, it's like, it's really my baby.
Yeah, and as you heard, that's where the phone rang. Something that's been happening a bunch lately. He did say he's been working on the plan for a couple of years and it should be fun. But writing is important as well.
I really want to just write my words, you know, like I got a lot to say, and you know, I have little clips, little music clips, little lyrical clips, you know, that just are here, you know, like in my phone, in my other phone that I still have, just because I have so much on it, you know. And so just now I really want to take the time to just sit down and not plan, but just write, you know, and really hone in my voice in the music.
So after a nice lunch, and for fans who like to know such things, he had a bowl of chili and we shared a club sandwich wrap. Nothing but water for this guy. He wanted to say something to you.
What I will say is, you know, throughout this whole experience, from the very beginning, I have been incredibly, incredibly blessed with letters, with text messages, with, you know, voicemails, with Facebook messages, emails from all over the place, and so much of it has come from Wisconsin. My brother plays in Madison at the Ivory Room, and he went down there, and apparently there was a big banner that said, "Vote Wisconsin, vote for Reed," and yeah, and it was just you know, hearing about that, just that hometown pride, you know, like that coming at me is just, you know, I don't imagine, you know, like your state rallying around you, because I mean, you just don't think about it, but then when it happens, it's mind-blowing. And so I just, you know, I want to thank all of you out there for watching and listening and supporting me throughout the journey, and this is not the end of Reed Grimm's journey, that's for sure. So stay tuned, and thank you again.
Throughout my many years in the media, I've been lucky to talk with people happily stuck in the limelight, notables of every size, shape, and magnitude. And I'm leaving this conversation with the realization that none has left me feeling better, and less than none have provided me with as much faith that there are good people in this world doing good things for all the right reasons. Reed Grimm is a good guy. He has the outlook I wish I had had at 26. And for the record, I'm glad he didn't become the American Idol, because I think he deserves and is better than all that.
Well, it keeps you on my mind.
Support for WPR comes from the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra with works by Beethoven, Sibelius, and Brahms. The symphony presents Victory, a concert at the State Theater on March 10th. Tickets and additional information are available at cvsymphony.org.
So, that was kind of fun. Really good time. 22 and a half minutes after 5 o'clock, and this is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. It's a pleasure to be with you. And big thanks to Dean Kallenbach for production support on today's show, and always. And thanks to Grace Fair for promotional support with Spectrum West. Let's see, here's a reminder. Wednesday at the Metropolis Resort in Eau Claire, it's the Recovery Show Tour, music and message evening featuring a trio of men who have stories to tell about life on the streets of Chicago and Milwaukee. Speaker Jerry Semple, music by Mario Street, and DJ Chirpmaster. Tickets at the front desk of the Metropolis and at the door. It all begins Wednesday at 7 p.m. What's going on? There's a storytelling afternoon tomorrow, 3 p.m. at the Schoolhouse at Simply Done near Downsville featuring Tanaga Yako, Native American performer. It's good family stuff. UW Eau Claire Wind Symphony and Symphony Band perform 2 p.m. Sunday, Gantner Hall of the Haas Fine Arts Center. Tickets online and at the Service Center. We have more Spectrum memoranda coming up. Well, we met new director Barry Hitt on a previous program. Now it's time for him to provide one of the several previews necessary during each concert season of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. Tomorrow, they have a concert called Victory. And being the curious type, I wanted to know where and how the title Victory relates to what's on the program.
All three major works that the symphony is performing all have a Victory flavor to it. The Egmont Overture.
Now, Nobu said that he felt powerful.
Yes, powerful and victorious, yeah. The Egmont Overture became the unofficial anthem of the 1956 Hungarian Revolution.
Oh, it did.
And Finlandia by Sibelius was written in 1899, and it was originally written as a protest against increased censorship by the Russian Empire.
Ah.
And the interesting thing about that is during that time frame, every time that piece was performed, they had to perform it under a different title to avoid the censorship.
Wow. It's good to have background.
The Brahms Symphony No. 1 is an interesting story, especially in the finale movement. Brahms hinted a lot at Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. And Brahms was looking at it and paying homage to Beethoven, and there were some critics back then that accused him of plagiarizing Beethoven's Ninth Symphony and actually referred to it sometimes as Beethoven's Tenth Symphony.
Is that the one we all know? Da-da-da-da.
Yes.
That's
mm-hmm.
the one? Oh, see? I'm glad I asked, because that's interesting stuff. That's why it's called Victory, folks. So, yeah, it includes Beethoven, Brahms, Sibelius. The Sibelius number includes some guests.
Oh, right. Guests in several fashions. First of all, we conglomerated with local elementary students to do some artwork.
Okay.
Their music teachers played Finlandia. The students drew what they felt as a result of listening to the music.
Oh, neat.
And we'll be playing on a slideshow on a big screen these pictures that these art students drew with Finlandia's inspiration, as well as we'll also be having some guest performers, members of the Chippewa Valley Youth Symphony, sitting in and performing with us as well.
I always used to do that with my kids. We'd sit and listen to classical music, and I'd say, what do you see?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you see? And they'd say things like, I see a little squirrel running across, you know. That's neat. That's good stuff to do for
kids. It's real interesting because you do get a lot of different perspective on what a young mind can visualize as a result of music is very has a lot of impact.
I wonder if years ago, and many, many years ago, when all of these composers were in their prime, I wonder if they did that kind of stuff. I wonder if they did focus groups with people and said, what are you thinking about when you hear
You know
this?
What? That is really interesting.
I don't know.
I
probably no record of it.
No.
There's no videotape of the focus groups.
Well, I'm sure they had critics, that's for sure.
Well, as you just alluded.
If they were young people, I don't know.
Yeah, but of course nowadays you have critics in the newspaper and you have critics on the radio who find something wrong with something, but many times say something is very good. So I wonder how the network of critics operated back when these guys were in their prime.
Be a good thesis for a paper.
It would. You're never too old to do a thesis. I'll do one for no grade. Because I'm not in school. Well, somewhere there's got to be information about
that. Oh, I would bet, yeah.
So now, see, that's opening a nice, delicious can of worms there. And you also have a very special, the evening includes a very special guest artist, and that is the winner of the Christo Young Artist Competition. And you can introduce her to us, if you would.
Yes,
please.
We'll be having a special guest that evening, Miss Gina Cucciani. She's an 18-year-old senior from Eau Claire Memorial High School. She's an incredible young voice, very talented soprano. And she'll be performing two arias with us, one by Massenet and one by Arditti. And if you can make it, you would be overjoyed with what you would hear.
Mm-hmm. There's a reason she won.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's always a highlight of the year. And is this the last concert of this series? You have another one.
We have one more concert for this season, May 12th.
May 12th. All right. Well, tickets are available how? I mean, there's three separate ways. You can get them. You can get them at the door. And this concert is tomorrow, so if people haven't received them yet, they can get them at the door.
Yeah, you could get them at the door, or until midday Saturday, you could still call in or order tickets on the internet, and they would be available at the will call window as well.
Okay, so midday tomorrow, yeah. It's good. You can do that.
But you can give us a call at 832-6366 or find us on the internet, cvsymphony.org.
7:30 tomorrow evening, State Theater, Eau Claire. Say it with me, V-I-C-T-O-R-Y. What's it spell? Victory. Another winner from the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra, thanks to Executive Director Barry Hitt for stopping in. As we listen to a bit of Brahms in Symphony No. 1 in C minor, third movement, on the bill tomorrow, I will remind you that if you stick around, you're going to hear about a musical theatrical tribute to the Righteous Brothers that Jim Oliver uncovered, and Jerry Way brings another original to the Heidi Center as Spectrum West continues after the news. Thanks for being here. Here's what's on stage this weekend and beyond at Western Wisconsin theater venues. The Gatsby Supper Club will be presented Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, March 15th through the 18th by the Heidi Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. The Old Gem Theater Company and Young Performers Ensemble will present a public performance of Boxcar Children Saturday and Sunday at the Old Gem in New Richmond. Caddy Woodlawn, the musical, will be presented by the Barron Spotlighters tonight, Saturday, and Sunday at the Barron Community Center. Tuna Does Vegas plays tonight and Saturday at the Fanny Hill Dinner Theater in Eau Claire. The production will run through April 1st. And the Eau Claire Children's Theater will hold auditions for Spring Awakening at 7 p.m. Sunday and Monday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. And that's some of what's happening in theaters around the region. I'm Jim Oliver.
Welcome back, everybody, to Spectrum West for the 9th of March, 2012. I'm Al Ross. Jim will be back with a segment about the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater presentation in Hudson all about the Righteous Brothers. That's pretty cool. But first, Jerry Way is at it again. And people of Western Wisconsin wouldn't have it any other way. The former music director has been charming audiences with original material for quite a while. And his newest project is a musical mystery tour known as Gatsby's Supper Club. He stopped by recently to provide a look at that project. Well, supper clubs have always been a big part of life in Wisconsin and the Wisconsin landscape. Tell me about the project.
Over a period of 20 or 25 years, I performed in many, many supper clubs and, of course, have enjoyed eating in them as well. Over the years, there were many unique experiences, humorous, somewhat unusual experiences sometimes that I had that would make good subject matter for a play. So I set about to write one.
Tell me what kind of a act you had back then.
Often I would perform as a single entertainer, sing-alongs, entertainment for listening, and sometimes with a trio for dancing as well. And many of the supper clubs throughout northern Wisconsin, I was fortunate enough to be able to perform in.
Did you do original stuff?
Mostly covers at that time.
You did.
I was writing songs and included some, but most of the time we would do popular songs of the time.
So when you decided it was time to write a musical about it, did you regurgitate all the memories right there, or did you have notes that you had taken over the years?
No, I didn't have any notes. It was things that I would remember, and as I sat down to put together the story, various things would come to mind. And, of course, the more memorable things are, the better they work into a play. When I sat down to write it, first I wrote the story. The rest came out of that story.
Is it simply a play that takes place in a supper club, or does it deal with the nostalgia of the social aspects of that era?
It's a musical comedy, and we have a cast of 22 actor-singers in it, and it takes in all of the veteran staff that it's such a wonderful place to work. They've worked there for over 30 years, the whole staff, and the regular customers that come in night after night, the bar regulars, the dinner regulars, tend to be the same people that have been there as customers over all the years, and they enjoy the wonderful meals that are there with the bread baskets and the relish trays and the specialty drinks that go on, come across the bar, and it's the place where everybody knows your name, of course.
Yes. And give us a number from the play and also the background of the song.
Well, many supper clubs and other establishments are known for having a resident ghost. And Gatsby's Supper Club is no exception. Now, the name Gatsby might bring to mind the Great Gatsby.
Sure.
And this former owner of the supper club is not the Great Gatsby, but he's a pretty good Gatsby. And he is a ghost, in fact. And this is a song that is toasting Will Gatsby at the very hour that he was caught in the crossfire in a raid back in the 1930s when the feds raided this gangster hideout, which was a speakeasy, which became Gatsby's Supper Club. So it goes something like this. It's called The Ghost of Gatsby. The stories abound where spirits are found in the pubs and the taverns, they say. Ghosts hide from the light, things go bump in the night, all the best kind of boogeymen play. At 11:07, we'll raise a toast and drink to the legend of Gatsby's ghost. There was never another as lively as he, as that jokester, the ghost of Gatsby. You hear how some guys are caught by surprise with the tweak of a nose or an ear. The ghost may come back and deliver a whack, but take heart, there is nothing to fear. At 11:07, we'll raise a toast and drink to the legend of Gatsby's ghost. There was never another as lively as he, as that jokester, the ghost of Gatsby. As that jokester, the ghost of Gatsby.
All right.
Were you thinking of one particular place or just your entire pool of supper clubs you were in? Is this fashioned
right.
after a place?
There are people. There is no particular person. They're fictitious people, but they're an amalgamation of many different people. Same thing with the supper clubs. It's not a particular supper club, but it's a kind of a combination of all the various places that I've worked.
That's a nice pool, I'll bet. Pretty colorful places. Now, talk about the interactivity of this play that the audience will be able to partake in.
Takes place on one particular evening, July 15th, 1962. And it is exactly 30 years to the day that Will Gatsby was caught in that crossfire in the raid. It turns out to be a very dark and stormy night, and the quirky customers are really coming out of the woodwork. There is an FBI inspector that shows up, Inspector York. And he believes, because of it being the anniversary of the shooting, that the person responsible will return to the scene of the crime that night. And by 11:07, the very time when Will Gatsby was shot, they will find the culprit, because it was not an accidental shooting. It was not just a simple crossfire. The murder weapon was never located. Various customers are asked questions. The whole audience will be included in the questioning, asked questions by Inspector York. There will be a big sing-along with the whole audience involved. It turns out Inspector York was an O'Malley on his mother's side, and it being right during the St. Patrick's Day time, there will be a big St. Patrick's sing-along. Well, the audience also has a chance to vote for the suspect they feel committed the crime. And not that they will be right, because there is a certain suspect, but they can register their opinion. And so that will be the audience interaction.
Now, here's something that just came to mind. Are you going to have fans that blow the smell of a supper club out into the crowd? I mean, with some prime rib?
We had not thought of that, Al.
Wouldn't that be nice?
But that's an intriguing idea. Yeah, yeah. My wife, Carol, has created a wonderful set that looks like with a log and the taxidermy, outdoor paintings, wonderful things for the set visually. And musically, we have 10 original brand new songs, and it's a comedy. We're hoping there's going to be lots and lots of laughs, lots of very funny things.
So it opens Thursday the 15th, runs through the 18th. How many performances?
We have 4 shows.
Okay, and it's a big cast.
11 men, 11 women, wonderful singers, comic actors. A number of them have been in our past shows, but we had also maybe a third of them came and auditioned and are brand new to our shows. Just very exciting.
Some choreography, too?
Yes, I choreograph, believe it or not. I choreograph the show, and there will be choreography.
What don't you do, Jerry?
And does he dance? Yeah.
Give us another song, would you? That's
all right.
That's
sure
good
will.
Stuff.
This is the closing song of the show, and if you listen carefully, my name is the very last word of the song. How can I miss you if you never go away? It's closing time now, so people, you can't stay. It's hotel motel time, and it's been a long, long day. How can I miss you if you never go away? This time of evening, when we've had our time to play, we bid you good night, it's time you hit the hay. We don't care where you go, whoa, 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 but you can't stay. How can I miss you if you never go away? How can I miss you if you never go away? Did you catch that way at the end?
I did. That was last word. There you go. Gatsby Supper Club runs at the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls Thursday and Friday evenings next week, 7:30. There's an 8 o'clock show Friday night with an optional earlier dinner feature available. And finally, a Sunday matinee at 2. Go to cvca.net for info and tickets or call 726-9000. By the way, tomorrow and Sunday at the Heidi, it's a day full of song as the Chippewa Valley Community Chorus performs under the direction of Kathy Wright's. 7 p.m. tomorrow and 2 p.m. on Sunday.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, offering online and phone loan applications for student loans, consolidation, vehicles, a line of credit, and more. Information online at wisconsincu.org.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Hey, by the way, there's a Woody Guthrie tribute concert tomorrow evening at the historic Civic Auditorium, a.k.a. the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. It starts at 7:30, features Pop Wagner, Charlie McGuire, and Tony Glover. That's good stuff. The Phipps Dance Company performs tonight at 7:30 and tomorrow at 2 and 7:30 at the Phipps in Hudson. There's also a chamber ensemble music event tomorrow evening at the Phipps and organ music Sunday afternoon at 2. A couple more Spectrum memoranda coming up. Jim Oliver enjoys talking to and about theater people. He keeps us posted on what's happening on the stages and venues all across western Wisconsin. He's one of our priceless WPR volunteers and, frankly, on one of my favorites, lists, because he adds so much to this program. He is here with this week's installment.
The musical duo of Bill Medley and Bobby Hatfield, whom we know as the Righteous Brothers, recorded their music from 1963 to 1974, with a six-year break starting in about 1968. They continued to perform together until Hatfield died in 2003. They were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that same year. A musical tribute, Righteous, the story of the Righteous Brothers, will open Friday, March 16th at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. Joining us by telephone from Hudson, where he is taking a break from setting the lights or whatever else he's doing to get the show off the ground, is Jim Zimmerman, owner of the theater and writer, producer, and director of the show. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Well, glad to be with you, Jim.
What drew your interest to writing a musical based on the Righteous Brothers?
Well, it's the music we grew up with. I guess if you're of a certain age, puberty and young adulthood in the 60s, you grew up with that music, and that was my case. I suspect it was partially your case as well. So there's a lot of folks out there, baby boomers, this music is special to them. And when I started looking at the music, it naturally drew me into who was doing this music, where it was coming from, and that led me into some really, really interesting stories.
So how long have you been working on it?
Off and on for about 3 years. Created a file on it about 3 years ago doing some initial research and found a lot of information about Bill Medley and Bobby Hatfield, their relationships, how the music was created, the folks that they worked with. And I found it fascinating the more I dug into it. And then about a year ago, I started making overtures to get connected with the surviving folks that were doing that music and still are doing that music, Bill Medley in particular, and I got connected with him through David Cohen, who is his longtime business manager for about 40 years, and it just evolved into a white-hot project that really, over the past year, turned into this musical.
Now, is there a storyline to the show?
Oh, there absolutely is. You know, when I finished it, and we started out sort of looking at it as a jukebox musical, but it really isn't. You know, when I finished the libretto, the script, and sent it off to David, and I sent it off to Bill, they came back and said, this really isn't a jukebox musical. It's a drama with music. And in fact, it is. You know, when you look at it, it's constructed a little bit atypical in that, we don't end the first act with a big musical number. It ends with a scene and conflict. And it opens a second act where you normally open a second act with music. It continues that scene. Now, there's music all through it. There's like 17 numbers. But it's really a dramatic story about Bill Medley, Bobby Hatfield, and the folks that influenced their lives and their relationship.
Well, Bill Medley is still touring, of course, working with his daughter. You indicated you've had some contact with him. What has his input meant to the show?
It's meant everything. I mean, Bill partnered up in this project and shared with me a lot of details of his life, his relationship with Bobby Hatfield and the folks that worked around them, information that has never been made public. And in collaboration with him over the past few months, we've been honing it down, figuring out what we want to include, what is inappropriate to include, but there's an awful lot of new information. He sent me 170 pages of narration where he sat down several years ago and chronicled his life. And it started off from the early 1960s, his childhood, his adolescence, what caused him to become the person that he is, both positive and negative, and also Bobby Hatfield. And it goes right on through to almost the current date.
He is Jim Zimmerman, a writer, director, and producer of Righteous, the story of the Righteous Brothers. You've lost that love and feeling, stands as the most played song in the history of American radio. Unchained Melody has since been called the best love song of all time. Well, we got to talk about the music that is included in this show, and tell us a little bit about how the music is presented.
I'll tell you, it's the gem in the whole thing. I mean, Unchained Melody, Ebb Tide, which was done around that same time, similar feel as Unchained Melody. You've Lost That Loving Feeling, Soul and Inspiration, Rock and Roll Heaven, the iconic numbers that the Righteous Brothers did. There's, you know, song after song after song that bring back memories, and it helps you put it in perspective of where they were at, how they were created. When Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil created You've Lost That Love and Feeling, basically they did it as an up-tempo piece and brought it to Phil Spector, who was then at that time producing for Bill and Bobby. And they played it for him. They sat there in the Marriott Hotel and pitched it to Bill and Bobby as this sort of up-tempo piece in F, which doesn't mean a lot other than the fact that it was way too high for Bill and Bobby. They permuted it through Phil Spector's vision for the thing into a piece that was dropped way down into C, slowed way down. In fact, when Bill heard it, he said, "The jocks are going to think they're playing this thing at the wrong speed. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it on radio ever has been." And it turned out to be just the most popular piece of music played on radio.
Is there a musical director, or are you the musical director?
Well, it's sort of a one-man band in that, yeah, I've got a music degree, and I am musical director as well. It's not too difficult when you've got good musicians, and we do have those. And you also have cover tunes to guide off of. And so we've done a good job, I think, from the standpoint of creating the sound that was on those 45s, Phil Spector's wall of sound. There was no digital echoing at those times. He basically took the sound, the recording, and put it into what was, in effect, a culvert that he put the speaker at one end of and the microphone at the other end of, and created the echoes that you hear on, you know, tunes like You've Lost That Love and Feeling.
Now, is this a two-man show, or are there others in the cast?
Oh, there's a big cast. We have a cast of 14.
Wow.
All the characters that they encountered throughout their lives, David Cohen being one that I've already talked about, Jerry Parenchio, who was their first manager, who went on to, after the Righteous Brothers broke up for the first time, went on to promote the Ali Frazier fights, the Thrill in Manila and all that. There's a bunch of folks with interesting stories that are surrounding the story of the Righteous Brothers.
I have to acknowledge I'm a mite older than you are. I grew up more of a contemporary of Elvis and Pat Boone and that crowd. But
Elvis is in this show, too.
Oh, is he really?
Yes.
Oh.
Turns out Bill Medley, Bobby Hatfield, knew him well. They were close friends. There's an Elvis story in there of how Elvis came actually on stage one day when at the Sands, when Bill Medley was performing solo after the Righteous Brothers had broken up for the first time, and walked across the stage, said, "Hi, Bill," and just walked off, and the crowd went nuts. Came back for the later show that evening, and he brought the Memphis Mafia with him. One by one, they came across the stage and said, "Hi, Bill." So, there's an awful lot of folks in the show. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
I was going to make a point there somewhere along the line. I'm not sure what it was worth as much as your stories about Elvis. But anyway, I was just talking about the music, and I grew up in early rock and roll, and then I sort of drifted towards folk as opposed to the rock of the Beatles and so forth and so on, and yet the Righteous Brothers are considered a rock and roll group. I don't know, is there a connection between rhythm and blues and folk in their music?
Well, their musical pedigree really began with doo-wop, and they moved out of doo-wop into the early ages of rock and roll when it was just a fad, and the strata of rock and roll that they moved into and were real hot on was R&B. In fact, most folks that listened to them thought they were a black group. The black radio stations wouldn't play them because they were white, and the white radio stations wouldn't play them because it was R&B soul music that black folks generally performed. So they were stuck in a catch-22. But they were really an R&B rhythm and blues. They modeled after Ray Charles.
You know, their black sound was kind of responsible for the way they got their name, wasn't it?
Absolutely. They got their name while they were playing at a place called John's Black Derby out in California, a place where a lot of black Marines frequented, and they were, after playing one of their numbers, the crowd went nuts, of course, and there was a black Marine in the back that said, and they were called the Paramours at this time, a black Marine in the back of the house went, "Man, that's Righteous Brothers," and from that they got their name.
Huh. Well, we've been visiting with Jim Zimmerman, writer, director, and producer of Righteous, the story of the Righteous Brothers. The show opens Friday, March 16th at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson and runs Fridays and Saturdays through May 12th. For ticket information, use your favorite internet search engine to find the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater. Jim Zimmerman, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, it is a pleasure always talking with you, Jim.
Wow, what a show. It's been fun. Reminders, the play Boxcar Children plays tomorrow morning at 10:30, Sunday afternoon at 2 at the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond. Next Friday night, it's the Bluegrass of Long Time Gone. At the Northern Lakes Center for the Arts in Amory, it's the popular exhibit Hubcaps featuring circular vehicular art. It opens tonight with an opening reception, 7:30 to 9 p.m. It'll be up through the month of April. Hey, thanks for being here. Thanks to all of our guests as well. See you next Friday at 5 when we'll bring you more from the world of arts, music, and entertainment on Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Have a great weekend.